This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navadar, in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. And I've been lucky to have the opportunity to fill in for Allison before when she took some time off to donate her kidney. So today we're sharing some encore presentations of my conversations from that time, as well as some more recent favorites. Now we'll get into a discussion about the intersection of race and literature with a book called The Great White Bard, How to Love Shakespeare While Talking About Race. It's written by Farah Karim Cooper. She's the director of education at Shakespeare's Globe Theatre and a professor of Shakespeare studies at King's College London. And listeners, I do love Shakespeare, so much so that when Professor Karim Cooper joined us, I just had to introduce the topic in a way that I hope would have made the bard proud. Three verses of iambic pentameter followed by a rhyming couplet. So let's revisit that conversation about race and Shakespeare with that cheeky little sonnet to kick things off.
We venerate this Shakespeare, man and plays, but at this time is his work relevant? Are race and gender topics he could raise, or should we cancel him? His time is spent. Go bite your tongue, one current speaker spits. These plays still speak to issues of today. Remove the pedestal on which he sits. Unveil the man, his work, through a new gaze. Professor Farah Karim Cooper's book, The Great White Bard, stares these plays in the face. From Titus, Tempest, and Macbeth, just look. How to love Shakespeare while we talk of race. But that's the rub. What love can we allow? That's all of it, and we discuss right now. Farah, welcome to the show.
That was just amazing. I love it. I hope you send me a copy of that.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much for saying that. I see you sitting somewhere with a lot of books in the background. Where are you?
I'm at the Globe Theater. We have a wonderful research department, and I'm in the library.
Oh, wow. So we're talking right from the source. And yes, it's appropriate that you're at the Globe Theater because, listeners, in case you didn't catch it in the sonnet, the title of Farah's book is The Great White Bard, and it's out right now. And you're the director of education at Shakespeare's Globe Theater and professor of Shakespeare studies at King's College London. And you have all of the accolades and all of the background, but I read that you were introduced to Shakespeare through Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society. What struck you in that film that sparked a lifelong commitment to Shakespeare?
Do you know what? He didn't introduce me to Shakespeare. It was actually Franco Zeffirelli's film, but Robin Williams made me want to be a teacher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when I saw Dead Poets Society, I was 18. It was the summer after I graduated high school, and I knew I wanted to major in something. I thought it was going to be law. And I saw that movie, and of course there was a lot of Shakespeare in it, and it brought me back to Shakespeare, and I thought, I want to do that. I want to inspire people with poetry, with great poetry. So yes.
what is it about Shakespeare that's kept you interested for a career?
I think it's the fact that every time I read a play that I've read before, I feel challenged by it in a different way. So I've started reading Shakespeare, obviously, when I was 15, but I didn't really get into it until I was at university. So I was in my early 20s. And we read As You Like It in my college English class. And I thought, what a great play. But there's something in here that's kind of bugging me. And it was the way in which one of the characters, Rosalind, was talking about another female character who had darker qualities, and she was making fun of her eyebrows being black. And of course, sitting in the room with black eyebrows myself, I was like, what's wrong with that exactly? And the professor didn't problematize it in any way. So what I saw there was a space where Shakespeare can be problematized, but I was still really moved by a lot of the other things that happened in the play. And I thought, you surely don't have to take the whole thing at face value, that there's a lot to read into these plays. And so it's just, for the last 25 years, just been a fantastic challenge with trying to read Shakespeare in a way in which I'm having a dialogue with him, as opposed to just worshiping the ground he walked on.
That last phrase that you said, the dialogue that reframes him instead of just worshiping the ground he walked on, is the way you start your book, actually, which is a good segue into there, because you begin your book talking about Shakespeare, the man, and how our conception of him is maybe not as accurate as we believe, and maybe we should take him off this pedestal. As you heard, that's where that came from in the Sonic. Dive into that a little bit, because when I was reading that, I thought that was a super interesting take. Like, the Shakespeare I know might not actually be the Shakespeare who was, right?
Exactly. I mean, I work at the Globe Theatre, and because it's in London, we focus on, in our education department, the Shakespeare of the working playwright, basically. And that person, who I've been immersed in for the last 19 years that I've been working here, doesn't really fit this sort of bard notion that other people seem to think needs to be worshipped. And so a lot of tourists and students will come here and they'll want to worship at the mothership. And I'll say, well, no, this is problematic, or that the building isn't 100% accurate. And they feel very shocked by that. So I became very curious about who this other Shakespeare was that everybody was worshiping. And so when I started doing a deep dive, I realized that it was in the 18th century when Shakespeare was kind of created anew. And a lot of the writers and the thinkers and artists of the time built Shakespeare up into this sort of monument and sort of fossilized him as a kind of beacon of English white identity. And it was really convenient for them to do that because at the same time, England was becoming a maritime empire and trying to sort of rationalize and justify its sort of colonization of other nations, as well as its engagement in the slave trade. So those two things are not coincidental, that Shakespeare rose to a godly status at that time, which he wasn't prior to that.
I'm talking to Farah Karim Cooper, who just came out with a new book about Shakespeare and race called The Great White Bard. And I want to point out that this isn't just an academic conversation. I mean, the book is filled with academic research and theory, but the actual practical application of making these kinds of ideas has received a lot of backlash for you personally. I read in 2018, you faced backlash for trying to discuss Shakespeare and race at the Globe Theater. It was in an interview with Hyphen that you said you were attacked on Twitter and written about on Breitbart. Why do you think that happened? And do you feel like there was any risk coming out with this book specifically?
Yeah, I mean, in 2018 was the first Shakespeare and Race Festival that I curated at the Globe. And at that time, there was less vitriol, but it was more like, why are we talking about Shakespeare and race? Shakespeare's got nothing to do with race. So that led me to thinking about writing this book. But it was in 2020 when I launched the anti-racist Shakespeare webinars that there was a horrible backlash, very racist backlash. And my my own ethnic origins were brought into the conversation. Oh, she's a woman of color. That's why she's talking about race. And actually, I had been at the Globe for 17 years by that point, you know. And so that backlash is about ownership. It's about people feeling that something is being taken away from them. And after the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement went global, and organizations like museums and galleries and theaters started to take it seriously, that's when you started to see a really racist backlash against any kind of progressive movement, whether it's in a theater or a museum. And I certainly had to face that in 2020.
So were you worried coming out with this book? I mean, it seems like you're leaning into it even further. Tell me about that.
I was a little bit worried about it, probably more so in the UK, because I think in the UK, there's a special sense of ownership of Shakespeare in the way that there isn't in the US. So I'm American, but I'm also a Pakistani. And so I think it was really, it's a double whammy for the British. Whereas in America, I feel like I was less worried because Americans don't mind other Americans talking about Shakespeare. So I was in the UK concerned about that. But I think it obviously didn't stop me, because what I'm trying to do is keep Shakespeare around. And I'm explicitly not advocating canceling Shakespeare. And I think that's what they all thought I was doing when I was running those webinars.
Gotcha. And you know, you said before in a previous question how really there are so many ways in which Shakespeare can apply to issues of today. And in your book, you go through different plays. And one that stood out to me, there's a whole chapter on Othello. In your book, you take us through a lot of plays. And the chapter about Othello is called Model Minority. There's a line in Othello where he's described as being far more fair than black. I thought your theory of the model minority as displayed through this character is gripping, especially thinking about how society treats notable people of color today. I think there's a lot of parallels there. So I wanted to dive into that, but with a caveat that not everyone is in AP English right now. So for those of us who are a little further out from the SATs, maybe we just start with the premise of Othello, and then can you lay out your conception of the model minority there?
Sure. So Shakespeare sets Othello in 16th century Venice, which was a very multicultural society because Venice was a sort of trading giant in this time period. So it was really financially lucrative for them to have people from all backgrounds working and living in Venice. And so it's about a Black African Moor, known as a Moor in that time period, who was the captain of the Venetian army. And it starts with another member of the army sort of screaming and shouting outside the door or window of Othello's now father-in-law, saying that, basically shouting a lot of racist epithets about how his daughter, his white daughter, has married a Black man. And she's done so without her father's consent. So it starts with this idea of there's been some sort of violation. A Black man has married a white woman, and this is a problem. So it ends up at the court of the Duke, who is dealing with other issues because the Turks are now circling around their outpost in Cyprus, and they need Othello to do some work for them and to fight off the Turks. So the Duke says, oh, look, it's okay. It's fine. You know, Othello's a great guy. We've all worked with him. We know him really well. And that's when the line comes out. He is far more fair than Black. And what he's saying there is that essentially, look, he doesn't act Black. He acts white. He acts like us. So let's just be okay with this. And so what you have there is a situation in which somebody who has kind of violated a kind of racial code in Venetian society is given a pass because he's very useful to that society. What happens in the rest of the play is that Iago works on him and tries to convince him that his wife is having an affair with his lieutenant. And unfortunately, Othello believes him, and they plot to murder Desdemona, and they do. He does. And it's a heartbreaking, heart-wrenching play. And what's difficult about it is that it seems to fulfill stereotypes about Black men and Black masculinity. So it's always been a bit of a problem to stage. So yeah, it's a fantastic play, though. It's a real sort of exploration of interracial relationships in a white dominant society.
And have you seen this play used towards the end that you're talking about in the book through either stage or a classroom, being able to broach these kinds of topics? Has it been effective?
Yeah, I think it's harder in classrooms. And that's something that I actually been thinking about how to address. A colleague of mine and I have been discussing it. Because a lot of teachers, especially white teachers, aren't necessarily equipped to have a conversation about race that isn't going to make all the students in the room feel objectified or uncomfortable. And so what I also get at the book is about discomfort and being able to lean into the discomfort of having conversations. And Shakespeare, for him, he was an advocate of discomfort. You were not comfortable when you went to see a Shakespearean tragedy. He didn't want you to be. And so we should try and be comfortable in the classroom. And there are productions who have tried very hard to lean into the racial tension and angst in the play. But often it can be unsuccessful, particularly if it's a white director that sees too much optimism in the play and says, oh, this play really, it's not about race. It's about redemption of characters who've been singled out for some reason. I'm like, well, the reason is race. So,
do you feel like there's an adaptation that really nailed it?
Yeah. So I there's a couple, but one most recently at the National Theater, it was directed actually by Clint Dyer, who is a Black director, and he's the first Black director to direct it for a major National Theater in the United Kingdom. Wow. And he was trying to get at the systemic racism, not just the racist guy who shouts racist language, because it's really easy for us to point fingers at the explicit racist. It's just harder for us to see the systemic racism in society. And so he really brings out that aspect of the play.
So, you know, Othello's a tragedy. I want to move to comedy, because this was another huge part of your book. You also spend a significant time talking about race and comedy. And one line that I really took out of here was, "When I set out to write this book," you write, "I had no intention of trying to separate Shakespeare from the racism that emerges from his texts. My goal was always to show how it rears its head, even in the moments that are the most unexpected or that seems innocuous." And that term innocuous to me really came up because it is not something that, you know, Shakespeare, Elizabethan language is not something that you just read once, you kind of get it. You've got to really dive into the text. So how much of Shakespeare's comedy comes from racism in the terms that he uses? How much of it relies on racism?
Shakespeare, if you look at his contemporaries, other people who wrote plays at the time, you would say, oh, Shakespeare was not racist, the others. Yeah, there's a lot of really stereotypical portrayals of people from other nations and other races and ethnicities who are really leaning into that stereotypical villain, where Shakespeare always provides a bit of dimensionality. But what is interesting is that in a lot of his comedies, he's using anti-black racism as a source of humor. That would have made people laugh, some of the comments that you hear in some of his most delightful comedies. And because it's not, the racism isn't the undercurrent of the play, that it's easy to miss it. So you'll just get all of a sudden a comment like Much Ado About Nothing, where the character Benedick is talking about with his friend Claudio about a woman that Claudio has a crush on. And he says, oh, she's too brown for a fair praise. And that would have made people laugh. What he's saying is that she's not attractive enough to praise her. And fair in that time was a very elite form of whiteness. It meant beautiful and virtuous and white with a luster or a shine. And that shine is the virtue of the woman. And no woman of color could ever achieve that because she's not white enough. So he's saying that this woman is too brown, even if she's not brown. But he's using brown as a way of denigrating people of color.
We've barely scratched the surface about all of these plays that you bring up and the ways in which we can reframe Shakespeare. I think the last question I want to go out on about the minute we have left is, what makes all that effort worth it? I mean, it's not making it a false dichotomy about why Shakespeare versus other people, but why is it specifically so worth it to try to keep Shakespeare resonant with society today?
That's such a good question. I mean, and I'm a little biased because I love Shakespeare, but I could have passed him on when I was a graduate student and studied medieval literature instead, but then I'd be in a whole lot of trouble there. But I think Shakespeare is still valuable for us because of the contemporary nature of some of the issues that he raises in his plays. I mean, there's a great speech in Midsummer Night's Dream where he talks about the destruction of the planet because of the way people are behaving towards each other. And the powerful resonance of that today just is unmissable. So Shakespeare's able to articulate or help you to think about questions that are so urgent in your own moment. And it's not that other writers aren't. I think other writers need to be brought into dialogue with Shakespeare. You know, if you teach Othello, teach Toni Morrison's Desdemona. Right. It's incredibly lucrative intellectually and emotionally to keep Shakespeare in the curriculum. Mm.
I've been talking to Farah Karim Cooper about her new book, The Great White Bard: How to Love Shakespeare While Talking About Race. It's available now. Farah, thank you so much. And I'll send you the sonnet.
Thank you. Please do. Thanks for having me.
The book is called The Great White Bard: How to Love Shakespeare While Talking About Race. It's written by Farah Karim Cooper. She's the director of education at Shakespeare's Globe Theater and professor of Shakespeare studies at King's College London. Up next, New Yorker cartoonist Naveed Madavian moved from San Francisco to rural Idaho in 2016, living for a while without heat or a working toilet. His graphic memoir is called This Country, Searching for Home in Very Rural America. We'll hear all about it after a quick break. This is All of It.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.